This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. We are back for the Talking Split Podcast, Season 6, Episode 1. So Season 6, some famous Season 6s we've had. Jon Snow came back to life in Game of Thrones in Season 6. Tony Soprano got whacked in Season 6. So one bodes very well for us, one not so much.
Probably should have gone with the positive.
Probably the positive second. That's all right.
We're back. Yeah. Classic. We are back. That's we right. We
sadly have no Doug. We are Douglas, unfortunately. But with me today, we have obviously that has already spoken, Ash Arnott, to my left of your radio, we'll call it.
Sure.
And Zoe Carr, to the right of your radio.
Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure.
I'll speak for Ash.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. Pumped to be here. I was just trying to figure that out in my head, left, right. Yeah. We got there for all the
left listeners. And right is brutal for everyone. Yes. That's that doesn't stop when you get into primary school or anything like that. Everyone still struggles with that. We are at a point where we are trying to get this done reasonably quickly because Team Australia are playing fairly soon. Is that the Boomers on today against Nigeria?
Yep.
Which we are affectionately known as the Winners' Cup, given we both rolled USA. So we'll see how that plays out and we'll go from there. As always, if you can, please rate, review, subscribe, like, share, retweet, all the cool stuff that you do on your social medias to help grow the Talking Split army, we'll call it. For lack of a better term, and get the word out there. We want as much interaction with this sort of stuff as possible. Ash, I believe you're on TikTok now.
I'm a TikToker. I don't make the videos. I just waste a lot of hours. No, it's not like Instagram stuff like that. You just watch videos. They're quite funny. I appreciate someone who can sing and dance, you know. I'm just on there to...
stalk.
I don't like that. I don't like... it's not...
appreciate the beauty of others?
The talent.
Oh.
Jeez, that's
I work a lot
worse.
In talent evaluation, so I just practice in other areas.
Very good.
TikTok, very funny. Very funny stuff. I waste a couple of hours a week.
Yeah, I downloaded it just with the idea of having a little bit of a look to see what it was about.
Yeah.
It made no sense to me. Like, the algorithm does not work for what I was looking for at that point in time. So, I might have another crack at it at some point, but it wasn't great, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, well, you know, look. Me and my three followers, we enjoy it.
See if I can get your fourth by the end of this show.
No, don't. I don't make any videos, so I just use it to. Actually, I don't know why I have it, I'll be honest.
So it has been roughly 12 months since we did the last podcast. Rob Mason was our last guy that spoke about how we teach athletes. We're going to have a little bit of an overview of just what's been going on since we've actually been back on court, which has been nice. It's... we've always said Victoria is the best state to be in. Currently, it is absolutely the best state to be in, as we're unfortunately seeing a couple of the other states going through lockdowns. Our thoughts obviously go out to everyone impacted by that in the New South Wales communities. Certainly tough, and it was great to have a lot of the New South Wales people reach out to us, obviously, while we were going through it last year, and hopefully we can reciprocate that on their end. But domestic's back, VJBL basketball's back, Big V's back, NBL One's back. We've had under 18 and under 20 AJC's run. 16s has been, what are we calling that, cancelled, postponed, rescheduled?
It's been cancelled. We're hoping it gets...
we're hoping for a postponement.
Rescheduled, yeah.
We're hoping that those teams...
I believe they just have to use certain words to make sure that people get their money back and certain hotels and flights. So, definitely they're looking at all different scenarios. We just don't know what it looks like right now.
So we're really hoping those teams get to go, obviously. We got a decent way down the preparation side of things, and obviously there was a lot of media attention around the Victorian kids going as well, which is it'd be really sad for them to miss out on, you know, a great opportunity to go and represent Victoria, Metro and Country. We have had some Metro Country games, which went fairly well, so we're very hopeful that they get going. Probably the biggest news we've had to this point, which we haven't spoken about, Ash Arnott got Coach of the Month, Youth League One Men.
And the photo's just... delightful.
Ridiculous. As we speak, we got Jared taking photos. This is unreal. I don't like the camera. And
but the camera likes you, Ash. The camera likes you.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, you know, I was lucky. It's all my players. I'm just very lucky. I got awesome players down at Frankston, and they got it done, and I've been nowhere near it since. it's been a very good league, good plays. I got a lucky month where we managed to string a few together, so... it's cool to be recognised, but there's only one thing that matters in a season, right? And that's that championship. So as long as at the end we got that, I don't care about the other stuff.
Be very nice. Coach of the year, be kind of special too. Like, I mean, if you win a chip, surely you're going to get coach of the year.
Don't think so. That's not a priority at all. I care about the ship. That's it.
Wow. Very different to the story he was giving before we started recording.
Yeah,
this.
But I told you not to bring that up. It was all about me. I told you not to bring that up.
All about me. Hey, how have you both found basketball since coming back? Like, it's we obviously had a fairly lengthy time out of it. How have you found it since coming back? Like, what's it the feel like around stadiums and those kinds of things?
Well, there's mass excitement. Obviously, the kids last year missing out and having to do multiple Zoom sessions and just to keep themselves occupied and keeping a hand in the game. So the excitement to be back on floor is great, and the only sort of, I think, things we've had to contend with a little bit is them wanting to have to go from 0 to 100 and having that understanding of, you know, you've got to work your way back into it and avoid injury and those sort of things. You've been off for long enough. We don't want you off anymore. So that's been a bit of an issue. Having some of the development, I guess, missing that much time has definitely played a part. But because they're so excited to be back on floor, you know, ever since getting back out and being into the country regions, it's been unreal. Like, the kids have been turning up, working hard. They're just grateful to be back on the floor. So it's been really, really good, and I think will help us accelerate the development that we missed over the last 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, we're hooping. Everyone's excited to be back on the floor. There's all this energy that they're trying to use up. I guess, again, that's the positive. The things that we have seen too is when you are out for so long and you've got so much time to think about what it will look like, you play it through your head. This is how it's going to be. And when it doesn't, I guess, look like that, there's that moment of disappointment, like, well, you know, I've been waiting so long to play in this game. I thought it'd be different. So just dealing, I guess, with some athletes around that and trying not to get too caught up in what you thought it was going to look like and just get out there and be, I guess it's that teaching that gratitude. Hey, we are back on the court. We're moving around. But again, yeah, the last thing they want to do is they've got all this energy balled up and they want to get on the court, and then we tell them they're going to go slow and we're going to build up and it's for the benefit of them. But they're like, no, get stuffed, Ash. I want to run around 100%. Let's go. So it's just, I guess, finding that balance. But yeah, mate, it's just so good to see us hooping again. Obviously, yes, we feel sad for, you know, we spoke about New South Wales and a few of these other states, but man, Victoria, we've done it tough in the last 18 months, and just to see the kids out there enjoying basketball, getting up and down, it's so good, and just the atmosphere in the gyms. Like, yeah, I wouldn't have thought that would be the little thing that makes you weak. And going, I guess it's really been a good thing that makes everyone grateful, coaches, parents, players. So that's the awesome part to it.
Yeah, it has been huge. Like, I know getting around to stadiums on a Friday night or even a Saturday for domestic and things like that, and they are buzzing. Like, people are genuinely excited walking into stadiums. They love the game. They just want to be involved again. Like, and that's been the really cool part out of all of it, is that, you know, we've missed it for so long, and you don't realise what you have been missing until you don't have it, obviously. So just and it's not even just the winning and the losing or anything like that. It's the social interactions that kids are now getting back involved with. It's the coaches actually being able to coach again. Like, we've really missed it. We were talking about it not too long ago. It's like, do we even remember how to take a timeout anymore? Like, if we had to draw up a play, would we be able to do that at this point? Like, how do we structure our training sessions when the whole time we've been sitting there saying, geez, how can I keep them occupied on a Zoom? And then, like, really, there's only so much stationary ball handling you can do before, yeah, it's like...
Correct. Hey. And there's only so many things you can do.
Yeah, exactly right.
I think that's one of the good things that's come out of this, because stationary ball handling and, you know, form shooting and those sort of things are the only things we've been able to do via Zoom. Now, we've talked about it a fair bit, but now I'm seeing more and more games approach coaching, because it's like, well, all we've ever done for the last 12 months is stand stationary, block train, do all of that. So now a lot more coaches seem to be putting in competitive, you know, development drills rather than going back to having that section of just, you know, spider dribble, figure eights, all that sort of stuff. They're putting things in and they're being creative to allow them to be, you know, stimulated and not, oh, well, I may as well be on a Zoom. So I think that's one of the benefits that's really come out of this sort of, that sort of forced hiatus that we had.
It's really important as well from the coaching perspective that we're not trying to expect perfection straight away. We have to be understanding that they're going to make mistakes, they're going to screw some things up, but our reaction to that is what actually matters. If we just tear shreds off them every time they make a mistake, well, where's the enjoyment in that for the kids? Like, we have to be supportive without question. We still can hold them accountable, but we need to be a little bit more of that growth mindset where it's okay to make mistakes. We want you to screw some things up, because, like you said, this is the first time they've been in game situations, potentially a year for a lot of these kids. So we need to make sure that we're at least positive and encouraging with that to get them back up and running again and feeling good about wanting to come back to basketball. The last thing we want is kids walking out of the sport.
Process over outcome, right?
Process over outcome.
Process over outcome. And it's also like every drill, every game, that might be a different process we're focusing on. But that big one is, in, like you go back to, encouraging. And I know we've spoken about it before, about watching, you know, when we did the Spain tour and we saw athletes over there and how Valencia Basket, that club, how they taught their young kids. It was process over outcome, and we were lucky enough to play 15s and then the 16s. And we saw how that grew and how that built, where they clapped the process in the under 15s. Well, the under 16s, man, their skill level, their passing ability, just the ability to play with flair, that encouragement they received, well, that grew. And well, if anyone watched the under 19s as well and saw Spain, you know, there was elements of that in there as well. So just that process over outcome. Now, you don't want to always, if they keep bricking 3-point shots, like obviously then you're going to have to work a little bit more on the process that aligns with the outcome. But yeah, I think we just focus so much on that outcome, and then we live and die on those. Does the ball go in or not? We celebrate it. And we'll get mad when it doesn't work out. I've never done that.
No.
Go mad at a kid.
Yeah, that's probably not quite true. Yeah,
we should cut that out, huh?
Yeah, we might take that apart. Yeah, it's, but I mean, what has been really interesting is seeing how all the other countries have played. Like, we do have incredible access to the international basketball. Like, I know we were talking about the Next Gen camp over in Valencia, ironically enough, when they had that over there, and watching, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid play in that final. And it's like, we don't see anything like that here. Like, that's a completely different, well, like the type of athletes they are for a start, but also what they're able to do is incredible. And I know I flicked the link onto a number of like coaches that I talked to and just said, look, have a look at this and tell me where we're going wrong with their under 12 kids. And all of them have come back and gone, damn, this is completely different basketball than what we see, which is really interesting, which does lead into what we've just gone through over the last week, which was the under 12 jamboree down at Dandenong Stadium, which was the coldest place on earth.
Mate, when we walked in Monday, and firstly, credit to Dandenong, they were awesome.
Unreal.
Unreal. But the heaters weren't turned on. So we were 2 hours into the session, and the first session, there was a lot of teaching moments because we were obviously preparing the kids for the games and we wanted to go over certain things we wanted to see. But we're 2 hours in, and some of the poor girls were still shivering. It got to the point where we had to go to our lead coaches like, hey, let's just play. Let's just get that blood pumping. And so that kept them warm for about 10 minutes. Yeah. But it was, you're right, it was one of the cold. We lay it up for the rest of the week. But some parents, I'll give them credit, they were rocking in with shorts and shirt. I don't know how they did it.
Yep.
So mentally tough guys. It felt like David Goggins was in the house, you know.
Oh, there you go. Can't hurt me. Ooh, so just for those that may not be aware, under 12 Jamboree, so that was picked out of the last lot of school holidays. So those Easter school holidays. So under 12s, they went to talent ID camps. That was out at, I want to say, Keilor and Dandenong.
Correct.
Off the top of my head.
Yep.
So how did you pick athletes for an under 12? Like, we're talking about talent ID all the time. How do you pick athletes to go to an under 12 Jamboree out of a camp situation?
Yeah, well, it's difficult. We do use games. We do our research before we go into camps. I think that's really important, because if we're just going off a camp setting, it's always difficult, especially when you're across two settings. So, yeah, we do our homework. We have lots of discussions with director of coaches and you know, under 12 of coaches, and anyone else has been able to see the basketball. So we take in a lot of information that way. But we use our six principles or six pillars of a Victorian athlete, which is our one-on-one offense, one-on-one defense, shooting, decision-making, competitiveness, and physical literacy. And I had no computer in front of me, guys. That is
very
off the
impressive.
Dome. I'm getting better at that. But we use those six areas. So when it gets to picking 80 athletes across two venues, yeah, there's definitely debates, and there's no doubt when you get down probably to the last 10 trying to fit in, you could probably drop 30 of those athletes there and take 10 and it'll probably be the same. And there's no happiness when we have to make those decisions. It is a tough decision we make, but that's also why we're in the job. We have to make those decisions. So we do look at those six pillars, and some of these athletes we took where we thought, wow, they're tall, they're long, let's give them a chance, let's put them in a setting that we think they can flourish. Then we have those athletes who are strong, and can ball their way through and make great plays. And then we have those really high IQ players at under 12s that you go, man, they really understand the game. So we take all different areas, and you could see that during the week. But 80 boys, 80 girls. We do have to pick reserves because under 12s families are new to the system. So some tried to get away for a holiday after coming out of a lockdown. So I know on the boys we had to replace, I think there was something like 8 or 9 boys plus. They're playing football, they're playing soccer. We got injuries here and there. So which is absolutely okay. We do encourage, obviously, our under 12 athletes to play multiple sports. And then with the girls, yeah, I think we had to replace 4 or 5 players, just similar, little injuries here and there, especially coming out of a lockdown. Some kids, unfortunately. I think the funny story, we did actually add one young boy from Hawthorn on the Friday before going in, and then on the Sunday, unfortunately, he broke his arm. So he was all happy being added on the Friday. Come Sunday, he was devastated. So they're just some little things we deal with.
Yeah, and realistically, this is not going to make or break anyone's career.
Not at all.
In under 12 Jamboree. Like, this is not what we consider to be high performance or anything like that. This is a participation event. And it is difficult, but you do want to have a little bit of an eye to the future as well. Like, which of these kids are just the raw gangly kids at the moment that just look a little bit unco, but you sort of feel like, you know what, with a little bit of work and a little bit of sort of extra guidance, they might end up being something long-term. Because we do talk about that relative age effect a lot of the biases towards athletes that are born at the start of the year. You know, they're potentially 10 months older than everyone else in that age group that are coming through as well. So having a little bit of a look, not just at who the kid is, but the story around that athlete is hard. And when you have, like, how many kids would have gone through those camps? Like, that would have been...
About 250.
Yeah, so that's a lot of kids. And, like, 80 making it is fantastic, but that's a lot of kids to try and have to pick from as well.
Yeah,
so absolutely. It does make it and super difficult.
We spoke about it, and we will continue to speak about it in any of our programs that will not make or break you. It's the ones who do make it are the ones who continue to work each and every day, get out, get reps in, work on their body, you know, eat the right foods. It's a pretty simple formula. You've got to keep working, and basketball's not fair. It never will be, and that's what we love about the game.
Yep, absolutely.
But one of the main reasons for things like Jamboree, because obviously the country have had it for a lot of years, and like you said, it won't make or break, but the main aim from a high-performance standpoint is to just expose them to terminology and system of play at their level. So those that are capable of moving through the pathway or progressing into the high-performance space, then once they get there, it's not brand new.
Yep.
So they've had, you know, some exposure to it. They get exposure to it from a country perspective then, through our academies and then stepping into SDP, VMPP, whatever it might be. So, you know, it's not a state team. It's not anything like that. It's just about exposing as many kids as possible at that foundation end to as much as we can to allow them, to give them the best chance to then be able to progress.
Absolutely, and it's really important. The hope is that they take this back to their clubs and try and help the other athletes with it and try and implement as much of it as they can.
Well, coaches too.
Absolutely.
It's big for the coaches too.
Huge. So we were really lucky that that Jared Healy ran a lot of the action on court last week, and he did a fantastic job, as he always does. If you were ever looking for Ash, you could find him by the door. Like, he was militant with, do not come in this door until you're allowed
COVID
to come
officer.
In this door. Make sure you go out the other door. Like, he was the most militant COVID officer we've ever had.
I think it's important context. Obviously, there was multiple tournaments going on at Dandenong, so we were trying to do the right thing in making sure that no one got in trouble. So with that, we had to ensure that people were walking through the correct door and walking out the right pathway. Some people tried to... Well, I thought they were above the rules. We sorted them out on the Tuesday. A few people had to get a text here and there just saying, wrong door. But we're not going to name names, right, Zoe? Won't name names, and also maybe a boss of ours that walked through the wrong... He wasn't happy when I told him off, but, you know, you got to do the right thing. And let me say this. The parents were unreal.
Fantastic.
Everyone,
yeah,
like,
absolutely were.
It was an absolute pain. And obviously, we have to do certain things with our COVID protocols, but all the parents were amazing. And we had a lot of, you know, just little comments like, we're willing to do whatever we can just to ensure the kids are playing basketball. And the kids were amazing. Parents were amazing. When it warmed up, it was amazing in the gym.
Yeah, I think those 15 minutes that it was actually warm at some point was great. But it genuinely was. I mean, we all understand under 12s, parents want to come and watch their kids. So
yeah,
they want to be involved in those sorts of things. And it is. It's a little bit of a sacrifice that, hey, you've got to leave after this game and you can only walk in this door and all that sort of stuff. But by and large, everyone was fantastic.
They were amazing. And we understand the schedule. This wasn't the perfect setting. Normally, we'd all be hanging out and watching games and people would be hanging out for the day. It was unfortunate that they did have to leave after their game, and we give appreciation to those families that came from, you know, your Werribees, your Althams, your Mill Parks. That it's not as easy for them to go home, and we understand the schedule at times. You know, it impacted their ability to go certain places, but again, everyone was on the ball, and it was obviously an amazing week, and a large part of that is just because of the parents and the kids' commitment to making sure they did everything right. So, yeah, it was awesome.
So when's the Country Jamboree?
18th. 18th to the 21st of September.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, so 18th, 21st, up in Echuca. Okay, and that's been running up there for years. Yep. That's a really good event as well. To be honest, it's the highlight on a lot of people's calendars. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a rookie coach or if you've been involved in the pathway for a number of years. It's actually really cool to go and have a look at the Jamboree and just see the new crop of kids that are coming through and those that are trying to get involved with it. Like, I know last week there were a stack of coaches that rolled through that you sort of sit there and say, you're not even on court this week, but you're down here having a look at people. And it was great to see a lot of directors of coaching and under 12 coaches that are actually coaching within that age group coming down to see how their kids were going as well, which is really good. So the hope is that can sort of have a little bit of a flow-on effect to what gets taught at BV camps that obviously gets taught back at Clubland as well with all those coaches and players alike. Probably the biggest change with Jamboree, and this has been in place since the Zeppel days, when it was still called Showcase.
We were a Showcase, back in Wyndham,
And before changing over to the Jamboree, is the size 5 basketball. Zeppel was big on this.
Loved it, Robbie.
He was huge on the size 5 basketball, and that got rolled out at Jamboree last week as well, which was fantastic to see. So, anyone that's listened to the podcast previously, Dr. Adam Gorman from Queensland University, Season 4, Episode 4, he speaks a lot about the Size 5 basketball and potentially even a Size 4 basketball and what it would actually mean for the athletes. Zoe, you've put a paper together which has gone up the chain fairly quickly, which is fantastic, with the hope that the Size 5 basketball might be getting rolled out a little bit wider than just Jamboree, which would be nice.
Yeah, so originally I didn't think it would move as quick as it was going to. So the plan was to try and collate some data first and use that as a selling point, thinking that we'd maybe hit some roadblocks as to why the size 5 basketball was important. Thankfully, we didn't hit those roadblocks, and it's looking like being implemented into the VJBL. So huge. It's massive. It's for those. There are some clubs out there that are doing it. So you've got, I think, McKinnon and Wyndham at this stage definitely have it in their domestic. And
I think Bendigo does too.
I think Bendigo does too.
Yeah, Bendigo. So watching the Jamboree last week, I popped down for a day and it was just incredible to see. I think within 30 seconds of being there, I saw some kids trying some things that just they wouldn't normally try just through lack of strength or physical ability. So it took probably 30 seconds to be able to say, yep, this is where we need to go, and this is great that this has come in, because we had the right in front of us that no data could tell us what we were seeing. But being able to bring that in, I think, will be massive for our development of our younger athletes. Hopefully we'll result in more players playing with more flair, players playing with more freedom, as well as accelerated development, and hopefully, because of earlier success, retention in the sport. So, I'm really excited to see how it goes.
It's really interesting. So Hockey USA had a little bit of an issue in the early 2000s where their numbers were dropping off fairly heavily, and it was a real issue for them, because obviously no numbers in their programs means no success moving on, and ice hockey is obviously a fairly big thing over in the States. And it was a real effort from them to make the sport fit the players rather than the players fit the sport. And obviously 8-foot rims and all those sorts of things, that'd be fantastic. But we don't have the ability to do that in every stadium around Victoria. But the basketball size is something that we can easily change. And I know that Hockey USA changed from playing on a full-size rink to playing across the rink instead, so they'd have three games going on at the same time, bigger goals, you know, those kinds of things. And all of a sudden, numbers went up. Kids are enjoying it a lot more. The scores were a lot higher. And even looking at the Jamboree scores last week, they were significantly higher than your average VJBL game that you get on a Friday night. We had a couple of, like, 85-point score lines.
Yeah.
Like, out of control. Like,
absolutely. It was so much easier to play the game. And you got to think, too, how we did it. We lined the kids up on Monday. Said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then they met majority. Yeah, the odd one had a teammate that they'd play with on a Friday night, their team. And the majority met new kids for the first time. They were only allowed to play 5-out offense, which we went over. You know, some have seen it. So, but most of them were seeing the concepts for the first time at this, or from our April camps into our 3-hour session on a Monday. And we were having scores on the first day up into 70 and 80s. How does that happen? And I'm telling you, we didn't teach any magical new tricks. It was because the game became easier, because now they could control the ball a lot easier. They were able to make passes further than they used to. They could dribble the ball easier. And yes, it was met with hesitation. On day one, when I said, who's excited for a size 5 ball? The kids didn't go, yay, me. They went, hey, get stuffed, Ash. We want our sixes. I'm strong enough. And
good
that's
culture you set with the kids.
Yeah. That's the hard. And we understand, too, when parents come in for the first time, we hear that they're using a size 5. The first thing they're probably going to say, well, how does that help me with VJBL? We don't care. It's not that we don't care, sorry. But our idea is we want to make sure we've got these kids going on and continuing to play in the game that they love, instead of focusing on an under-12 championship. So I know some of the DOCs right now are probably not going to like what I say, but I'd love for those players to come out of those programs and they're playing in senior basketball. One day, hopefully, we're watching one of these players play for the Opals and play for the Boomers. That's what it's about, right? We're trying to create players that are going to play well into their 30s. So this was all about giving them the enjoyment, making the game easier, which we saw. And we saw, like, majority of our kids were right-handed. I've never seen so much use on their left hand. It was awesome. It was amazing. Kids taking chances. We had kids double pumping and getting the ball to the other side. Some kids were doing things with their handles that I've never seen in under-12s. We had Billy Millenhall there working with the referees, which was another awesome thing of the week. We got some work with our referees. We sat down and had a chat, and he's like, Ash, this is unreal. I haven't seen this quality of basketball at under-12s. And he said the moves, the passes, the handles these kids were trying, he goes, I haven't seen anything like this. And this is a guy that's been around. He's been to an Olympic Games. He's ref.
Don't sell him short,
Ash. Sorry, multiple. Don't tell him. I hope he's – please, cut that out.
Bill doesn't know to use podcasts, mate. You're
that's fine. We're good. Whew. But this is what we're talking about. So – just to see, and even at the end of the week, you know, they went back to their size sixes, they go and they do attend some of these things, and some of the kids have the strength to be able to do it, but the majority don't. So being able to see all 8 kids on a team be able to all do the same thing was awesome, and that's what we get. Like, there's no reason, if I just went to a pickup and picked 4 new teammates, showed them we're going to run 5 out, and then said, you know, we can score up into the 80s. Now, people are going to say, yeah, we had 5 quarters. It was running clock with timeouts. The clock didn't stop until the last 2 minutes. And even then, the game was so free-flowing, that clock barely stopped. Like, games weren't going for longer. They were literally, you know, 55 minutes. Yep. It was clean. That we didn't have any overtime. Well, we had some great – and we've never seen so many threes for the win, right? Oh, we had close games, but we had kids knocking down proper shots for the win – because it became easier. I did laugh, though, the first time we gave him the size 5 ball. You'd imagine, you know, 10-year-old boys, first thing they did was whipping that thing from half court. I'm like, lads.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing? Give me the ball. It's my turn. Yep.
Exactly. But that, I mean, it does make a significant difference, though. Like, I think I was there for like 2 or 3 of the days. And the amount of kids that were legitimately hunting threes, and it wasn't because, yeah, I just want to be a bit of an idiot and kick it up there. It's like, no, I can genuinely make this shot now. I want to shoot
technique.
This. Yeah, with technique. Like, they weren't compromising.
They weren't chucking. Yeah. It was a proper shot.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I mean, one of the big things, anyone that's watched a VJBL game on a Friday night would know what it's like. It can be real ugly and ratty at times. Like, and a part of that is due to the overemphasized structure. Like a lot of teams press with structured presses and the likes, and you know, I can go on a 50-minute rant about why that's not a good idea. But you know, for the interest of everyone tuning in for next week, I won't do that. But the ability to just play pick up full court man to man, like everyone's responsible for their kid, no problem at all. But the spacing was just so much better because now it wasn't this whole I'm going to hide behind, I play pack line with my under 12s when you're not, you're zoning, and that's okay. Like do your thing, but. Now it's like, well, I actually have to guard my player out on the three-point line now. So the spacing was better. The ball movement was so much better than it's ever been before. Like the amount of times we would see a pass and a cut and an actual throw the ball back and get a layup out of it was incredible. Like now kids are starting to have to read back cuts. Like I can't tell you how many times on a Friday night I see a back cut because they just don't happen. Like it is literally probably zero. Because no one plays up in denial defense. No one actually tries to guard the ball because they don't have to. No one has to guard the ball out there because no one can make the shot out there.
Or and they can't make the pass.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because they don't have, they physically can't make the pass. And that's where hopefully with the size five, it will negate the success of presses, full court presses in under 12s. Because now I've got the ability to get my eyes up and make that pass to someone hitting to the middle or down the line. Whereas at the moment, it's like, heaving a shot put.
Well, I've seen, I have seen, you know, under 12 coaches and speaking to a few, there's been some coaches that have been known to, they press all five guys up into that back court because they know that, a lot of the athletes don't have the strength to throw it
over the
top.
Playing into a deficiency.
So in one way, I'm looking at the coach going, bloody hell, it's genius. You know, you found a way, not bad. Second thing, and especially in our job, we think, well, how does that help the athletes? It doesn't. So just for more context, you know, for the listeners, with the Jamboree, the rules were you only were only allowed to play man-to-man defense. And we wanted full court. We wanted early pickup and guard your yard. Learn how to keep your player in front of you. Now, that became more difficult because the offensive players had a better ability to be able to handle the ball and get past their player. So not only are we now challenging the defense there, which was awesome, offensive players are getting more confidence to make moves, which was awesome. Second thing, we were only allowed to run five out with a huge emphasis on cutting and being able to read your defender. You weren't allowed to run to the ball. So if I dribbled, picked up the ball, what do we normally see in under 12s? Three guys come, yeah, Robbie, give me the ball. No, you either had to backdoor or you had to get open and create an open cut there. So that was, and that got better as the weekend went on. I know you guys were there on the last day. We were seeing backdoor cuts. We were seeing face cuts, which is awesome. And you could see the kids really bought in. But why? We were able to make that pass. And credit to Jared Hillier. You know, we organise G because most of the time we are away, Jenny and I, with the Metro side. We're away with our under-16s. This is actually the first time I've been able to sit, appreciate live what we're doing at the Jamboree because we're away and it's all it's done is double down. Like this is one of the best things we are doing in our job because we know we're going to see the impact of what they've learnt, what they've worked on and that size five ball and the confidence that they've hopefully gotten from this in 3 or 4 years when these guys are all still playing basketball and doing really well.
Yeah, well, and it's important to also remember, like we were discussing the other day, the in say, domestic grading, you're still going to have blowouts. It's not going to bring not so good teams closer to good teams or great teams. But what it will do, you might still have a 60-point loss in a domestic grading in the beginning of domestic grading before they start moving teams around. But instead of being 62 to 2, it might be 120 to 60 or something like that. And now, yeah, okay, you've been absolutely smashed, but well, I had 15 points and, you know, our team played pretty well and we had a chance to actually succeed and do some things. So it's not as demoralising walking out. The kids still walk out happy, still, you know, wanting to come back, still wanting to play the game. And ultimately, that's what it's all about. You know, we talk high performance all the time, but we need the athletes to be able to then reach high performance. And if we're handing them a basketball size that is the same in under eights, that is the same as what they're about to use in the Olympics, that doesn't make sense. And that's not conducive to development, successful development and success within gameplay to make them happy about what they're doing or enjoy what they're doing. So,
and it makes an argument too. Now, I know we didn't do this, but we've talked about the 8-foot rim. Mm-hmm. Let me hit, can I need that button. Story time, please, Robbie. Oh, I love that. Thursday night, I'm down at Frankston Stadium. My co-worker, Andrew Harms, and I walk into the gym. We're about to go into our video room to watch some film. And the NBL 1 women's are in there. We look out in the court, and that ring was down to 8 feet.
So you dunked it?
It's the first thing we did. We had some fun. We got out and had some fun. We saw that. So imagine, you know, I know we get this heat saying, well, they play on a 10-foot rim. You know, we should be playing that at juniors. But the first thing we do as adults when it's 8-foot rim, I'm like, yeah, baby, I get to dunk for once. You know what I mean? So I'm going up, boom, boom. We're like, how easy is this? Is this what it's like if you're 7'2"? You know, these bigs have got it easy. Like imagine, even the kids. Yeah. When you see the ball going through the net, when you can do things you've never done before, you have fun with it. When you have fun, you want to do it more. Now Frankston basketball won't drop the rings anymore. Apparently I'm too heavy on the ring. But it's just funny. Like here we are, we're 35 and 33 years old. And it's at 8 feet. And the first thing we do, we're trying to dunk it. We're trying new things. It's the same with the kids.
Absolutely.
Like, so if you're under 8s, under 10s, even under 12s to an extent, yes, we know you can make it on that ring. But sometimes if it's easier and we're working on skill and they're getting better, then why are we not doing that? And like, and I know
– it becomes a carrot for them.
Yeah, and I know basketball and Victorian change probably doesn't go together. But there's a new time. And I'm, why not? Everyone else is catching up. So that's my thing is why not? Why not be different? It's
well, and you talk about, though, the rim size and it being more fun and things like that. So for an average – the journal that this paper that has gone to our board and has been approved was based on had information in there that the average 8-year-old for a 10-foot rim that they normally play to to have it in proportion to your average adult, that would then be a 14-foot rim that they'd be playing on. So obviously being able to, like you said before, Rob, being able to change the rim size would be ideal as well, but we can't control all of that. But the one thing we can control is the size of the basketball. Yep. And I think we're already, Jamboree proved that we're already seeing the benefits of that.
What was really interesting too is watching the games, it actually looked like senior basketball. Yeah. Like, you know when you see under 12s and it's just ratty, it's just, there's chaos, there's kids flying all over the place and all that sort of stuff. There were times where it's like, actually, this could be a 16s or an 18s game without a problem. Yeah. Like the spacing was so much better, the decision making, like my God, was the decision making so much better from these kids because now they actually had to make one.
Yeah. Parents were loving it.
Yeah.
And if they didn't, just stay quiet.
That's ash.arnott@basketballvictoria.com.au for all your complaints.
Parents were loving it. We were loving it. It was great. And I know people are going to be listening to this going, you know, these guys are idiots. They're crazy. But the argument is too, like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? Well, one, we've been in a lockdown. Like, I don't think we can get any worse.
God forbid we have some fun.
Yeah, like, let's get out and have some fun. And at the end of it, if someone has research to show that another way is better, then we're looking at it. We're trying to find... And I think with every decision that is made or everything that's put to the table to consider, there's a lot of time and effort and research that's gone into it. And it's not that we're just making things up on the spot for the hell of it. Like, hey, you know what? Why don't we just move to a tennis ball? It's going to be easier. No, we're not doing that. There is time. And I understand with every decision that we do make, there's going to be it's going to be met with some negativity from people. And there's going to be some people that don't agree. And that's fine. There's in our job and as a basketball coach, and every coach listening knows that it doesn't matter what you do, someone's not going to like it. And that's the beauty of being, you know, a coach. But I think at the end of the day, if everyone understands that every decision that's made is trying to be for the best interest of the kid and how to make better players and how to keep retention, and especially for our Victorian teams, like we still want to be the best.
Yep.
We want gold medals at nationals and we want kids making the Boomers and Opals and we want kids going on and being pros for a long time. Like these are like at Frankston again, I'm lucky. I get to watch Dave Anderson train. I don't know, the guy's probably 53 now and
put some case on those
legs. Let's make the myth even bigger. But it's amazing you watch someone like that and his understanding of the game and you see why he's been able to play for such a long time. And that's what we want to create. We want to create such great basketball, smart basketballers that when they are 40 and 41, they're still giving back to their clubs. Like, imagine those kids there who rock up to an NBL one game and they're watching Dave Anderson, who's played, I think he's one of the most winningest Australian basketballers of all time. Like, that is unreal. We need more of it. How do we create that?
So because the kids are now no longer in self-preservation mode, where it's just, I just don't want to turn the thing over, so I'm just going to dribble the dots off this thing because that's more safe for me. Now they just have to make a decision. When should I kick the ball ahead? Should I make that cross-court pass out of transition? Can I make this with one hand out of transition? Can I get a handoff with something? Like, can I find a way to play? And that's the thing. The earlier these kids can be exposed to decisions, the better they're going to be in the long term.
How many behind-the-back passes did you see?
I think it was, even when we were doing the breakdown stuff, would have been easily six. And that was their female athletes. Yep. Like, I didn't even see the afternoon session.
Who are less likely to do it because they're the most compliant.
And I even saw one, a righty, do a behind the back with his left hand. Yep. And it was like, as he ran past, a little wink, which I loved. love the confidence. But that was just awesome to see. And the parents would go, oh, they cheered. All the coaches would look at each other and like, unreal. Mm. Like, even the teammates got excited. That was fun.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, when we still had kids, and listen, the coaches still coached to win.
Yep.
And that was the biggest thing. We've never ever said, don't just roll the balls out, see how they go. No, we just changed the framework in how we're doing it. But our coaches, they still coach to win. There was, unfortunately, on the boys' side, there was a team that had a couple of close games. They couldn't pull out a win. They were devastated at the end of the week. But then once we went, hey, what did you learn? Did you get better? And all the answers are yes. And at the last question was, did you have fun? Did you enjoy it? And every kid was like, hell yeah. Hmm. Some of the parents emailing in going, hey, the only negativity we had was it went too quick. Like, that's what they're the emails. Now those kids are jumping out of bed the next time going, we want to be there. We want to play. We want to get on the court. Man, that was fun. Imagine how much practice is fun now, where they're doing all these little drills and the reps, and now they can practice different things.
Well, and like with the research that you're talking about, we still are going to be collating data and things like that to be able to help us with whatever the next decision might possibly be, whether it is, does this work, does it not? Do we need to try and find a way to implement the 8-foot rim? Is there something else we can do? So there is data that we're still trying to do and still work that we're doing on this. And I suppose if anyone's listening and is a bit of a data head and loves doing that sort of stuff, please reach out to
Robbie. Probably not me, because I'm not great with emails.
No, not fantastic. But or math. Oh, no, it's just pretty good at math.
Math's good. Yeah, 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah, it's English. That was the
anyway,
issue.
Once you guys are done, we do need help with that because of the, you know, we need resources. We need feet on the ground. We need people getting videos of their games and videos of teams from now while they're still using the size 6, so we can collate that data. And then it's fairly basic stuff, but, you know, average points, average turnovers, you know, all those sort of things. So then same from a junior level through to a senior level as well. So then we can see, you know, in 5, we're not going to see the benefits, the real benefits of this for probably 3 to 5 years. Hopefully it's before, but the real tangible benefits. But, you know, if in 5 years, the NBL 1, for instance, average points have gone through the roof, average turnovers have dropped, all those sort of things, if we can then link that back to average points and average turnovers in our under 12 since using the size 5, that gives us that sort of data. So if anybody wants to help out with that project or anything like that, please reach out because we do need hands on deck.
Absolutely. Anything you change from the event? Like anything that you wish you'd sort of done a little bit differently? Or any drawbacks to using a size 5 that you saw?
No, well, the turnovers would have been up. There would have been probably some more turnovers, but that would have been just the willingness to take some more risk and try new things, which we were okay with. I know in the past they've done a closer three-pointer line, so that'll be something in the future that we still look at again. Maybe that's that next step. But there will be, in terms of drawbacks, I think it was all positive. It's probably just the scheduling. That was probably the drawback on our end. So we'll blame Jenny for that one because she's not here.
And won't listen. So yeah. You're pretty safe.
Just make sure no one tells her because I'm scared for my life. I guess, yeah, The five out will stay.
Yep.
Teaching kids how to play with that. Again, there's a positivity. The drawbacks, maybe it just takes a couple of games to get used to. So they might just impact it a little bit earlier on. And but other than that, it was a really positive week. Like, you come out of it, yes, it's a long week, and in terms of a lot of goes into it, and but you come out of it feeling really good.
Yep, I agree. I thought it ran really well on my end too. Like, just looking at, and even just because it's, you're dealing with under-12s, it was actually a really good opportunity to get a lot of new coaches into that we haven't really seen. And we had some experienced ones there that have worked camps for us for a number of years and all those sorts of things, which is fantastic. But it's even great to see the new coaches coming in from different clubs, networking with each other. And it's like, hey, I usually coach against you, and let's actually have a chat and find out what goes on. Like, what do you do differently to what I would normally do? It's a great way to see coaches starting to interact a little bit more, because we do want that you know, culture, I suppose, of sharing and finding out what other people are about. And it's like, I used to dislike that person a lot, but now I've had a chat with them. Actually, they're pretty good. Like, I really like it. So, I mean, one of the questions we got was, you know, how does this impact on the, like, the coaching pathway? It's like, well, we can know in about 5 minutes if you're about this or not. Because are you only trying to win and you're just, that's your only focus? Or are you actually buying into the pathway here of, this is about development? Can you actually teach? It's one thing to be a great coach on a Friday night when you have training sessions, prepare your kids, and you can go away and do your thing. Can you pick up a group of kids that you've never met before, that you have nothing to do with, and coach them? Like, what's your demeanor like? Do you get frustrated? Do you go to the refs constantly? Like, all those kinds of things stand out really quickly in this sort of a format, because now we're starting to see people teach. And that's really what we want from our youth coaches in particular. Like, I have no doubt, like, there would have been, what were there, 10 teams, 10 boys teams, 10 girls teams?
Yep.
Okay, so that's 20-odd coaches. There is no doubt in my mind that we've seen some future state team coaches there last week.
Without doubt.
No doubt. They were really good. Like, and it was even great to see some of the other coaches coming back in that are currently state team coaches that want to just pitch in and help out. Like, it's good to see, like, the Randy Shanklins, the Dave Peters, the hub leads, like Lucas Allen, around and just helping out with people and saying, hey, look, can I jump on the end of your bench? Can I have a chat? Can I listen to it? Super receptive to feedback.
And that was really obvious, right? Walking from court to court. We had multiple coaches walking from court to court. Now, we didn't have a huge impact when coaches were coaching during the game. You know, the odd time, you know, I'd take a time out or someone else would step in, and that was more that we were seeing something, we thought it would be easier just coming from us. But most of the time, those conversations were happening once their team left. Hey, what were you emphasising? What did you pick up in that second quarter when, you know, you found that they couldn't guard? What were you talking about in your timeout? Stuff like that. So you challenged them and had them think, and then gave them a new challenge for the next game. And that was what was really good. And what also we challenge them at the end of the week is we get them to write, even though the kids don't necessarily receive it, we challenge them where they have to be able to evaluate players as well, because that's just as important in our industry. Can you identify talent? And I think if we could take anyone off the street and go, hey, who's the best player here? We can find that, right? That's the easy part. It's being able to go down the order and go, okay, can you identify that diamond in the rough? And then if you can, what do they do well? What do they need to improve on? And that is a hard skill that, you know, even I'll admit, I get plenty wrong. I get some right, I get some wrong. But we get better with every selection because it takes time and experience in putting yourself, okay, I think he does that well, I think she does this well, and I think that transfers over to this game really well. That's just years in the seat. And that's what we're now challenging them at the Jamboree, is what's your feedback? Do we see the same? And we got them to cross, you know, tell me about that kid. And then we had our hub leads talk about certain kids as well. All right, what's the information? Everything's the same. Well, great. You know, we're teaching our young guys, our young coaches, to be able to pick up on those things. So it was great.
From a coaching perspective, I think what's great about both Jamborees is that it's several days. So everybody can handle a team, even if they're getting frustrated for a day. Everyone can do that. But, you know, by day four, how are you going? Yep. You know, are you still teaching? Are you still emphasising the right points? Are you, you know, still encouraging your athletes? Has one kid annoyed you to the point where you've stopped coaching them? All those sort of things that you start to see. And they're little things that we look at, you know, come time for state team applications and or moving, you know, coaches moving through the pathway. So I think it's a really good guide as to what sort of coach are you, what sort of development do you need, and then, you know, we can sort of go from there.
Well, and 12s is the true test of a coach. Like, drawing plays is fun and we all enjoy that, there's no question. But can you relate your message to a 10 and 11-year-old? Like, if your team is the best team there, are you still pushing them to try and be better again, or are you fairly content with where you're at? And that's all the stuff that you pick up on with coaches as well, which is really interesting, I think, in a lot of cases. So if anyone's looking to get involved in the Jamborees for next year, I believe the country appointments are already done.
Yes, I believe so. If not, contact Craig Hockley.
Yep. Details on the Basketball Victoria website. If you're looking to get involved next year, obviously we're a way off appointing coaches, given we've just done it.
Term two. Normally we get coaches in for the April camps, and then a lot of those coaches will go on and we'll ask them to come back. If you want to be involved in camps, you just hit myself or Jenny up. And I think the big thing right now is for young coaches, like, get involved. Yes, you may not be in reimbursed, and yes, it may take a couple of days out of your holidays, and you may need to take a day off work, but get involved as much as possible. Like, there's been a loss in translation over the last 10 years where, I guess, and I've got to be careful how I word this, but everyone wants everything now. Everyone wants it now, and they want to be given that team. They want a first side, and they want this, and they want a state team, and then it's a grind. Doing what we do is a grind, and it takes time. And anything in junior sport is, if you're getting paid for 2 hours, you're working more than 2 hours. Like that's just the way it is. It's always been like that. And we're trying to encourage our young coaches. And I know you just said, like, watching our Jamboree coaches this week, there's some future state coaches. Absolutely, there will be. They're going to have to work.
Yeah, it won't be next year.
No, it's not going to be next year. It's going to be, you know, 8, 9, 10 years down the track. And that's the one thing, and anyone who's ever heard me go on a rant, which is literally every day, we talk about this. Like, we've got to grind. The only way you're going to get better as a coach is putting yourself in these opportunities, experiences, and getting around the gym and being a fly on the wall. And, yes, you're going to have to do stuff for free.
Invest in yourself.
Invest. That's the way it is. And getting around at camps. We had one young a coach that came through you, Robbie, hit us up. He said, I just want to be involved. Anything to be involved. Like, don't care what it is. I'm happy to watch. Now, he ended up assisting. And he, as the week went on, we put him with one of our experienced coaches. And he ended up coaching the whole last game, you know, by himself. And he got that development because he reached out and he said, hey, I want to get better. We're all about getting better. And we'll connect them and network, and we'll introduce you to new coaches, and you can go watch other practices and introduce you to some of these hub leads and connect you to different, like, even school academies. We've got some amazing coaches at school academies, and network that way and just give them opportunities to learn and become better. Because if we're not changing and we're not working on ourselves, well, how are the kids supposed to get better? What we're preaching and we don't do it ourselves, like, that's the crazy part I've always felt in our coaching community. Like, we keep telling our kids they've got to work on their game, they've got to get better, but we don't as coaches. It's very frustrating.
Well, and it's not as simple as just, you know, I'm just going to do my time and then my time will come. You know, you've got to see genuine improvement in these areas. You've got to get involved. You've got to, like I said before, invest in yourself. You know, go get yourself accredited. Go get yourself, you know, a mentor. Go do all these things. I know from my journey, that was, like, absolutely invaluable to me, the things that I learnt through those sort of processes. So, you know, being able to really commit to it, and yes, it does take time, but, I mean, how many years did you do, Rob, before you got a state head coach role?
Off the top of my head, upwards of 7.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, like, that's a really big investment. Yeah. And we understand that, we know that there are different sort of family situations and things like that, but you can still be involved in our pathways, not having to, you know, do 7 years of assisting and things like that for state coaches.
Like, it made it a lot easier, it turns out.
But, you know, there's other opportunities there. And I think also there needs to be a bit of an understanding too sometimes that, you know, you might be a fantastic SCC coach, like a great SCC coach, in terms of translating up into the next level, into the 16s and the 18s state teams. That might not be a possibility. It just might not be in your makeup. It might not be with your experience level and things like that. That doesn't mean we don't want you anymore. That means we want you to be in that SCC area and do the greatest things that you can do in that area.
And so help other coaches.
Help other coaches, exactly.
Like, you know, be a resource for someone else. That's it's right. such a really valuable part of it. Like seeing the coaches actually network that I know don't know each other last week, but all of a sudden you see them walking out of the stadium together, talking about how it went, what they're doing differently, where do they play next week. Hey, we might bump into each other. Like, that's the best part of it.
It's awesome.
Like, build your network as a coach. Like, I think it's such a really valuable part. And to be honest, time with you guys as well makes a difference. To be able to have a chat with you guys and sort of find out how you work and things like that, you don't always get that opportunity. Ash is the hardest man in the world to get on the phone. The only place he's harder to get it on is email. Like, near on impossible.
Yeah, I'm not.
But
not
if you send
email.
Him like an email or something with like Suns in four, he will respond to that. No hey, question.
We'll talk about the Suns in a minute. But yeah, the last thing I just want to talk about is the coaching community is such an awesome community, and just really important not to eat our own. Like, we see a lot of people go whack whack. I can do that better. I can do this better. If you sat in the seat, it doesn't matter if it's under 12s or a state team or a national team, man. Coaching is difficult. It is hard. Someone's always got a better way, right? Like, hey, I know. We hear about it all the time. We've got to stop eating our own. Like, it is literally holding back our sport when we just shit on each other. Sorry, you might need to use the swear button there.
If you could give me a heads up before you swear, I've actually got a button for that.
Yeah, sorry.
That's really good.
But, like, we need to do a better job of encouraging and promoting each other and seeing that there's so many ways to coach this game. And, yes, as the state, we do have a, you know, we do talk about certain terminology and the way we want to play the game. Yes, that's the way we would like to coach it. We think it's a really good way. It's going to help our kids. We're not saying this is the only way, because it's been proven all around the world. There's so many different ways that you can coach and be highly successful. I just hate seeing it. And especially now in today's world, we've got social media, we've got these stupid chat rooms, we've got all these other things. Like, we got to do a better job of encouraging each other and picking each other up and going, hey, man, Zoe, that was a great game. Well done. That was awesome. Like, I learned something from that. And taking the good things of each coach, because nobody's perfect, right? Nobody's perfect. And I see right now, like, Greg Popovich, yeah, he's lost two exhibition games with the USA. Now everyone's saying he can't coach. This is a guy that took the Spurs to, what, four or five championships, taking the 20 consecutive playoff appearances in a row. Like, the first thing we want to do is can him. Like, that's the part I just wish we did a better job. It's even with our players, just that encouragement, getting around each other, because coaching's becoming harder and harder right now. And the more we, you know, you ready for that button? The more we can each other, the harder it's going to be. And we're losing really good coaches because people don't want to deal with that anymore. So that's not a rant. That's just more of a plea. Like, hey, let's get around. Let's build each other up, because we do have. I strongly believe we have some of the best coaches in the world, but we're losing them at a greater rate, right? Because we bring each other down.
Yeah, I think that sort of behavior stems from ambition. So because there are limited roles, like especially limited full time roles in basketball, you know, everyone. That's where they want to be. And it's okay to have ambition. That's no worries at all. And it's actually okay to have an opinion. One of the things I always try and keep in my mind when I'm watching a game, and if there's, let's for example say there's a sub that I wouldn't make. If I'm saying something out loud, and I only ever say that at home, I'll say, you know, all things being equal, I wouldn't make that sub. Now, because we don't know if that athlete has run past the bench and just gone, I'm spent. I need to come out, or is carrying an injury and is on a minutes restriction that we don't know about, or whatever it might be. So what you're judging, you've only got half the information. You know, it's like taking a test and you've only been taught half of the sort of syllabus, you know. So you need to make sure that your ambition doesn't outweigh your courtesy to the other coaches within our fraternity. And I've said it a million times. I think I've actually said it on this podcast before. It is really important. What Ash is saying is really important, that we do a better job of creating our fraternity, because everyone else has one. Like, players have one. Parents are their own one. Administration, they all sort of band together. Referees definitely have one.
I'm not saying anything about the refs.
So no.
If you want a coach of the month award,
I love them. I love them. They're great.
I'm not saying they're bad. I'm saying they have a fraternity. They are a group. They stick together. They look after each other. That's the sort of stuff we need to be doing here, as coaches. And it's okay to also be disappointed when you miss out on a role to somebody else. You know, if Ash gets a job that I went for, like, of course I'm going to be like, oh, because I wanted that job. That's why I applied for it. But my first action should be, hey, mate, best of luck. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help you out. And
do it all
what
the time.
What you'll end up seeing.
And I cry for days. I cry and I cry and I cry.
But what you'll end up seeing is, I might be wrong, but I don't know that there are a lot of coaches that if you went into that scenario and I say, hey, Ash, you know, congratulations, best of luck with it. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help. I don't know many coaches that would go, get stuffed. I'm not interested.
No, they use that as a resource.
They like use
that's
you. That's
an opportunity for, hey, that's a good connection I have now. If I need something, potentially I can tap them on the shoulder down the road somewhere. And it's a good way to link in with other people. Like, be a little bit ambitious, like you're saying, no problem. Go and talk to someone you wouldn't normally talk to. Go and find out what they do, why they're successful, what they're doing. Coaches are great sharers. Like, let's face it, we've gone for just over an hour now, which was supposed to be about 35 minutes, because we've ended up going and just talking basketball stuff. Coaches love to talk basketball.
We love the sound of our own voice.
Absolutely. Like, I sit here and listen to this on repeat every week. It's just to get the listens up. But it is one of those things where people will want to talk basketball with you. People,
yeah.
And to be honest, the ones that don't want to share it aren't worth talking to anyway. Like, everyone wants to talk basketball. So go and put yourself out there and find out what someone else does. All right, Suns in four, Ash.
Suns
did you have
in four,
to give
mate,
an alibi for where you were at the time? Because it looked suspiciously like you in the stands that day.
Yeah. I did receive 6 or 7 messages. First one was from Kennedy Kariami. He goes, is this you? Well, obviously it's not Suns in four. They keep reffing the game. Well, when's this getting shared?
Friday. So it'll be game five. Yeah.
We
so.
Should be 3-1 by that stage.
Yep.
They keep reffing Giannis the way they are, mate. We're in a bit of trouble, but... Just so we're clear,
are you bagging the refs?
The NBA refs.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Australian refs are amazing. They're amazing.
Just especially those ones that are the youth league one at Frankston.
Yeah.
Of course, anyone that's looking for tickets to Frankston games, you can hit Ash up using the promo code ActuallyArnold via his email address.
I don't know
address.
If that works. But, yeah, if they keep reffing the games, just so we're clear, though, I'm not a bandwagon fan. I've been a fan since 2005. All right, guys. So
the Nash era?
Yeah, Nash era, that's when
so
I moved.
So you jumped on that bandwagon?
I did jump on. I didn't have a team at the time. I did jump. I was young, but I haven't moved since. It's been a long decade. Even when I lived in Phoenix, we weren't the greatest, so there was some tough games I had to watch live, but it's good that we're there now. But, man, if they keep calling all these cheap fouls on Giannis, we're in trouble here, Robbie. We are in trouble. So bold strategy to let Giannis score 40 points a game. I'm hoping we change that. I'm pretty sure Monty's all over it, the great man. There's a reason why he's coach of the year. And we're in a good place. Suns will be up and about. When we win, I'll probably take 3 weeks off, party, celebrate, and then I'll come back and, yeah, still won't do my emails.
Yeah. Don't know that it'll be quite the same as when Italy won Euros down on Logan Street. You might be the sole celebrator.
I'll be sole celebrator down in Clyde on the farm.
And maybe Paul Mallett will have to FaceTime each other.
Yeah, Paul Mallett. We've been checking in with each other, making sure that sun is rising. We're up and about.
Excellent.
The Valley Boys.
Excellent. Hey, thanks very much for jumping in, everyone, for this one. Zoe and Ash, thank you for your time as well. I know this is technically your days off, which you're not supposed to necessarily be in the office for, so I appreciate it.
Yes, I love
Ash,
it.
You do have days off.
No, I don't. I love it. This is what I do. Live, breathe basketball.
Excellent. Hey, thanks everyone else for jumping in as well. We are back next week. Ginny and Coops, provided Coops turns up. We'll see how this plays out.
And just remind, if anyone has any questions for me, to email me at jenny.screen@basketvictoria.com.au.
That'd be great. Auto forward.
She'll just answer them for me. She'll just ask and write it back. At all.
Hey, don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, like, share, and retweet the podcast out there as well. If you do want to interact with us at all on social media, you can do so via the hashtag Talking Split, or you can get Ash on his Twitter account, which is
Ash Arnott 3, I think. Ash Arnott. Oh, man, I do this every time.
Zoe, yours is?
@ZoeCar85.
Very good.
One second,
straight
guys.
Off the cuff, you can get me on @RobColter, or you can get Ash on?
Ash Arnott.
Yeah.
And TikTok.
And TikTok.
See if you can find me.
If we end up on the TikTok socials, you know Ash has had a lot to do with it, because it certainly won't be coming from my direction. Thank you very much, everyone, for jumping into the podcast, and we will catch you back next week.
Tune in and join the tribe on iTunes and Spotify. Put this basketball coaching on the next level. Pedal to the metal, we deserve a medal. Interviews with coaches, coaching and advice. Turn it up and get a slice. This that knowledge you don't want to miss. Get your game up by listening to this. So like, share, and retweet if you down the ride. And don't forget to hit that subscribe. And read the name on the socials real quick. That's hashtag talking split. Cause this too legit. Topics always hot and lit. Cause you are now in the mix with the Talking Split podcast.
Oh yeah.